Right now, it is time for us to join with our middle studio guest, who's Cynthia Hausmunder. It's time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And I expect we will have Janet along any moment.
I'm ready to jump right over winter into spring. And when you keep saying, well, it's 53 or 60, I'm like, wow, temperature's gone up.
It's a damp 53.
It is.
It's okay. I'll take it.
All right.
It's on the right. It's going in the right direction.
Here's Janet. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
All right. Time for us to go take a look at the Lakeville Journal and some of the stories. And I'll start off with you, Janet, first, I think. You've got a big article right on the front page. Tell us what you want in your Lakeville Journal.
That's right. And we have actually the same story on the front page of the Millerton News. And this is actually from Cynthia Hausmunder, executive editor of the Lakeville Journal, and Whitney Joseph, editor of the Millerton News, and me. And from all of our staff and everyone who has a stake in wanting these newspapers around, we are laying out the situation. We all know newspapers are struggling across the country. We put some statistics out there for everyone. You know, more than 1,800 papers across the country have closed recently, and do read this carefully, and you will find a survey at the end of that article that asks what you value from your local publications, what you would be very sad to see go, what you would be just as glad to see go. So we really are taking this as our next step. We want to know what our readers think. You can also go online to our website and fill this out. There's a box right at the top of the website you can go into and fill it out online. And we really want to know what our readers want. We have, everyone should read this. Cynthia wrote at the base of it, by the way, and we all edited and added our two cents in, as always happens. But, with a vast knowledge of what happens at our publications. And we are unusual in that we're independent, we're small, and we have survived, since 1897, but always changing every single week. So,
well, the interesting thing about the situation that any small local media company, be it the Lakeville Journal or be it us, is more than just the changing social media aspect. We live in an area where the Lakeville Journal and Robin Hood Radio also rely on businesses to advertise and underwrite. Mm-hmm. And this is why some people get very mad at me. I'm so upset at the schools in our area, because we have people that won't come to our area and leave our area. And this is a problem that the selectmen and the schools and the real estate agents have to get by. Pretty soon, who wants to come to the northwest corner and start a brick-and-mortar business? Really think about this. We survive as your newspaper and as a radio station, yes, on you on subscriptions, we on underwriting. But we also need a vibrant economic community to help support us survive.
Well, that's the key of it. And you say subscriptions, but really for us, advertising is key. Advertising is the bulk of what we do.
Because we
only charge so much for subscriptions. And I have to say that compared to where I thought we would be with subscriptions by now when we started our website 20 years ago or something, or longer, we still have a good base of subscribers and people who buy single copy sales on the newsstand, because we still have places in our towns that are not well wired up and do not have good internet service. And we do not want to cut out those important readers because people have said to us, well, why don't you just go online? Everybody can see it. Well, no, everybody can't. And it's somehow, that's our core, and we don't want to change that. Anyway, the advertising is key.
Yeah.
The healthy economic fabric of our communities is important, but we have to look at what we want. You know, people are moving in and making second homes here, and the realtors appear to be doing fine as long as those are the people who move in. But if we want our schools to also flourish, we need to have families able to move in. And certainly we've written an awful lot, you know, on our opinion pages on the need for affordable housing and, you know, support for young families and jobs, et cetera. But, yeah, who will want to come in and do a brick-and-mortar store? That's always been the case because it's always a challenge on our little main streets. It's not as if these publications we have, and I'm sure you too, Marshall, have ever been profitable. We have not. And when I say ever, I mean probably since 1897. All we look for is to break even.
Yeah.
And if we're not able to do that, we're not able to be here. So we're looking at this seriously, and we would love to hear from our readers. And whatever we hear, we will go by. So please do fill out those surveys.
All right. We'll move on to a story by Caitlin Olinger, retailers grappling with changes in tax regulations.
And actually, the story about this is a little bit more personal and more emotional than the headline indicates. And so I was at the inside, you'll see Russell Dunst was awarded Marine of the Year by the Marine Detachment. So I was at the VFW in Canaan, and Kirk Harrington, the commander, came up to me with a letter and said, you know, I'd like you to take a look at this. And so the VFW is coming up very strongly against the tax increases, and they've definitely are making a political issue out of it and saying that the new taxes, which as anybody who's been paying attention knows are super complex and have a sort of a social engineering aspect in terms of eating and drinking. But what he's calling out is this is going to make a lot of problems for the VFW, which if anybody who's watched that VFW in Canaan over the last 10 years knows that Kirk Harrington and the volunteers there have done an incredible job of really making that place a community center. They renovated the community hall, which was a huge big job, and people have really responded well. They have family parties there. They have reunions. They have tag sales there. They have fundraisers there. They've built the big stage out in the back. They have concerts all summer long. They're really trying to make it a community hub and a place where our military veterans can kind of come together and be with like-minded people at a time when the other, you know, VFW and the other military social centers are starting to kind of, you know, they're starting to age out the membership, and the membership is starting to shrink. So they feel very strongly that the VFW here needs to be saved. So they put out this letter saying, call your state and federal representatives, but specifically to not include Craig Miner, the one Republican in the group. So we talked to Maria Horn about the changes in tax regulations, and it's strange. There's an increased 1% tax on hard liquor, but not on beer. And in fact, there's a 50% discount on to-go beer from craft beer distilleries. So I think the state is saying, you know, this is a new business model. We want to support it. But, you know, in terms of these guys, it's a big tax on the hard liquor. Plus, there's a new tax on rental halls and prepared food. So it's going to hit them in a lot of different angles.
You know, people have asked me, you know, what's your solution, Marshall? Because we have to pay our bills as a state, and we have to pay our bills as individuals. I'm a big believer in user taxes, and I think that all these small taxes can be thrown to the side. And you look at Great Barrington; they're getting $1 million a quarter from marijuana sales. $1 million a quarter. Now there's a place just north of there that just in their first quarter handed over, I think it was $300,000. There's user taxes. We have user tax on liquor. We might as well have we might as well have it on marijuana. We might as well have, if you're going to use a toll road, you know, pay to go on the toll road. There's lots of user taxes that are much more even, because you pay for it if you use it. I mean, the state needs to get more money in, and we need to control spending. It's a very complicated issue, and
it is.
And people have got to – our legislature, Democrats and Republicans, have to come together and find a way to make this work. Otherwise, the state of Connecticut is going to wind up like upstate New York.
But I do feel like what Kirk and the VFW members are saying is, when you tax, you're choosing who you're going to tax, and they feel that it's taxing – is putting an unfair burden on the military veterans.
I think it's absolutely true. That's why I believe in user taxes. There's things that when you use things, you know, it's much more equal. You just can't just do like you did in the old days. You can't tax that way anymore.
Right.
It won't work.
A question of, so what they're saying is, you know, decide who's like, are you just picking on the little guy, and why are you not supporting the military veterans? That's the message there.
Yeah. And Caitlin Olinger does a good job of laying it out, and she has a background of understanding beverage and beverage sales, so really understood a lot of the nitty-gritty in here. So do read her piece.
And now that we're talking about taxes and housing and veterans,
I know
the school enrollments.
Now, exactly, all interconnected.
I would have never ever thought in my lifetime that the enrollment at Housatonic Valley Regional High School would be 320 some students. Never in my lifetime.
Never enormous, but it's
at one time it was 600 to 700 people.
Yeah. Right.
It's a beautiful school too, I'll tell you. And I know that you have a strong feeling about administration, but, you know, there's, as you just said earlier, there's a lot of reasons why people are not really raising their children here and sending their children to the public schools. It's complex, and it's the changing fabric of our community. And I think with all of these things, as with the Lakeville Journal, as with WHDD, as with our schools, it may inexorably mean that there's change and that there's going to be some loss of services, and it may be that the schools are going to have to consolidate, or that you know, the papers will close or something. So people really need to sort of stop and think maybe more deeply about I guess that's what our survey is about. It's like, what do you really value? Because it's like it's not theoretical anymore. We're really looking at a point where people, you know, things are going to be closing, and you have to decide who you want to be as a community. And if the decision is maybe we don't have schools here, maybe we just, you know, bus our children to Great Barrington and they're all tuition students because they have such great schools because they're selling so much marijuana. You know, it's a question of what they want.
All right. A different thing on your front page, and Mark Godburn, everybody, I think, not only in Connecticut but across the nation, was just unbelievably upset about that B-17 crash, which happened at Bradley.
That story really blew around the internet so fast. It was a very, very sad story, which is a vintage World War II, one of the last B-17s, travels the East Coast, and people are allowed to go and sit in it and even take flights in it. And you probably actually know why the plane crashed. At the time that I was reading this, I don't know why the plane crashed.
Well, there was a problem with one of the engines, and they circled to come back to the airport. They actually made it back to the airport, but due to the problems with the engine, that they lost control and actually hit one of the outer buildings. Thank God people survived. People died, but thank God people survived. But it's one of those just horrifying stories, because there's not one of us, I don't care whether you're a plane enthusiast or not, if you're out there and you see a B-17 fly by, you stop and you look up.
Right.
They're amazing machines from years gone by. It's like the steam machinery in Kent.
It makes history, and like when you go to the Roman Colosseum or anywhere, you're kind of like, oh yeah, like it was. Well, I mean, this is our week when we talk about theoretical versus realistic. Yeah. It makes you suddenly go like, oh, that really did happen. It wasn't just, you know, something I read about in a book, and then you can actually feel the ghosts of the people who were. So Mark Godburn, who is normally a columnist for us, lives up in Norfolk. Used to live in Canaan, from a big local Canaan family, and writes really beautifully about. Having been on this same plane with his brother, who's a pilot, and talking to his brother about the plane and about, you know,
I was on a B-17 many, many, many years ago, and it's amazing.
They're tiny, right?
No, they're not tiny. They're rattle traps, and you say to this, these things held together under bombardment, under flak, and they were amazingly engineered for the time. No heat or anything like that. They're just amazing planes. I have to get on to your best picture in probably 100 years, and that is the picture of the bobcat that you have.
It's good, right? We kept sort of joking. Excuse my friend Douglas, who I saw yesterday, and I said everybody in the office was thinking, that can't really be the real photo. He picked it up from the Nature Channel or something. But in fact, he said, no, these bobcats have been for years hanging around our neighborhood, Chatfield Drive, which, as you know, is a very residential little kind of mini community within Salisbury. And you can see, you can see the tail, you can see the little ears. And a nice description from Douglas of what he thinks that cat was up to.
All right. Let's go on to the Hard Life and Times in Cornwall and Hawaii. That's this is a story that comes up every once in a while.
Right, because in Cornwall, the mission school, foreign mission school, is a very big part of the town's history. And a sort of a reminder that Cornwall has always been a little bit socially progressive. And there are lots and lots of different stories about what happened when there was this foreign mission school that had many students from Hawaii. And I believe some Cherokee, somebody was saying in my office. I should remember all this. But as you say, there's been a lot of stories about it. But this time it was actually the The Hawaiian Mission House's historic site and archives of Honolulu came, and they did a presentation there about the link between their organization and little tiny Cornwall here. And fascinating, and a great description by Leela Hawken.
All right. And right under that, once again, Representative Hayes.
She's so great. She's been here tons, and we really appreciate it. And that's, you know, always available. Really, really happy about that. And so she came to a celebration of the 21st Century Fund, which was started by Jack Mahoney, just a local hero. For people who weren't lucky enough to have known him, he was an extraordinary person. Died, feels like a few years ago, but it must be about 10 by at this point. And he had been a principal at the high school and really cared a lot about the kids and was always looking for ways to give every child the chance to fulfill his potential, and didn't treat it as like, you're here to learn to read and write and be able to read the Constitution. It was like, I don't know, a lot of kids aren't academic. They're sports oriented. Let's make sure there's a sport for every kid. He's the reason why there's so many team sports at the high school, you know, the arts. And so he traveled around the country, took a 1-year sabbatical, looked at what the most progressive schools were doing to support their kids, and came up with this idea for the 21st Century Fund, which supports projects of students and faculty that are outside the normal curriculum. So celebrating 25 years.
All right. And English language scores up in Salisbury.
Math scores down, but happy to see the English scores are among the top in the state.
All right. Want to move on. You were talking about veterans before. Dunn's honored as the Marine of the Year.
Russell Dunn's a very quiet man, and married to Cheryl, the land use officer in Canaan, who is the most bubbly, outgoing person. It's an interesting, you know, you can see why some couples work. And just the nicest guy. And it was Nick Gandolfo, who is one of the senior – I think he is the senior veteran now in the area. He gave the award to Russell because last year's Marine of the Year Brian Richardson had passed away. So Nick Gandolfo was the one who handed over the ceremonial sword and honored Russell at a very nice little ceremony at the VFW hall.
All right. A couple stories out of Falls Village. The Center on Main was packed for the fundraiser for the library. And also, old teacher of mine, Ellery Wood Sinclair, led a hike.
Yeah. And a good friend, of course, of Jack Mahoney. And that wonderful generation of teachers is not going to last forever. Ed Kirby, too. We're so lucky to still have Ed Kirby here with his great memories and all that he did for the school. And same with Wood Sinclair, who's in a wheelchair now, but still led a tour of the Chestnut Grove that they've started over in Falls Village, where, you know, the chestnuts were predominant here. So many old houses had beautiful chestnut wood in them, and then a blight came and killed them. So they're trying to bring back a new, stronger strain of them. And then the Falls Village Library, great auction, always lots of art shows there. And they're getting ready now for the 12x12 art show, so keep an eye out for entry information on that show.
All right. Big headline. Kent prepares for new Scaticook recognition bid.
And this is an ongoing concern that we've had. It sounds like, you know, when you read the history, it's been going on since the 1960s. But the Scaticook Tribal Nation and the Scaticook Indian Tribe, I won't try to explain it because it'll take up the whole show. But Jeff Zinkowitz, who was the attorney for the town of Kent, and they've retained him because he's the expert on the Scaticooks in Connecticut. And so they're gearing up to respond to a new bid for recognition by the Scaticook Indian Tribe, which is the locally based branch of the tribe. And the possible consequences described by Jeff Zinkowitz at a Board of Selectmen's meeting.
All right. Very quickly, the Fall Festival coming up this week, 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Yes. Not as many scarecrows out yet, but look for them to be appearing on the streets by Friday. And then while you're looking at the scarecrows, be sure that you cross in the crosswalks when you cross the streets. However, cars need to really keep an eye out because people do have a tendency to sort of pop out from between the cars, and we've had some very bad accidents. Two of the people who were involved in those accidents started a petition campaign to try and get safety beacons in the center of Salisbury Village. So the state had said no, and then they changed their minds and said yes. But do remember, you do have to cross at those crosswalks if you want to be protected by those beacons when they're put in.
All right. And about the white boxes, they're not what people thought they were.
I think that the advanced march on the 5G. They're putting in fiber optic cable and preparing for a new service by Altice.
A Wi-Fi service, yeah.
Not a 5G?
Yeah, not a 5G.
Okay.
Wi-Fi isn't 5G. I mean, not now. Eventually, 5G will take over. Now, they can go – there's a thing called gigahertz. They can be 600 gigahertz, but it's not like 5G. 5G is powerful. Wi-Fi is not like the regular, what you get off the regular phone service, not even close.
It'll be interesting to see aesthetically, because I think a lot of people are upset about this idea that there's going to be all these little boxes up on the side of the road for 5G. So I guess this is the advance march on that.
Yeah. I think it's great that Cornwall went out and got an answer to people who had the questions.
Because there's no internet there. That's one of the reasons why we have such a, you know, still have strong, very strong paper sales, is towns like Cornwall and Sharon, and even some of the other towns really can't, people really have a hard time getting the paper online.
All right, I've got to go to the story. I remember when Mike Guy had the first female football player.
Oh, yeah.
At Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
Who was that?
I forget, but she played and she was great. And I think she was in on the punt team and stuff like that. Yeah. But now Housatonic, it's a combo of schools, has the first female football coach in Connecticut.
And so when you see MCW, it's the United Co-op team for Wamogo, Housatonic, and Oliver Wolcott. I'm not sure. I can't remember where MCW, where the initials come from. I used to know that. But anyway, first female football coach high school in history. And in the state, and I love the photo that Willie Yon took, and of course we're very excited to have Willie writing for us, a local sports hero who has a degree in journalism from the University of Connecticut. We talk about that on the next page, but he's been writing sports, and we actually had him at the Sharon Selectman yesterday. He's working on his journalism background and thinking ahead to his career post pro baseball.
All right, pizza, teamwork, and Lime Rock for two-wheelers.
Yes. Nikki Blass adorably emailed us and was like, it's very important to the parents in North Canaan that you come to the kindergarten soccer finals. And we're like, okay. So Shane Stample, again, summer intern for us, doing excellent, excellent work. Student at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. I happened to know he was free around 5 o'clock on Friday. And I said, do you mind stopping over at the field on your way home? Did a really wonderful story. And there's Willie Yon, who, of course, I've known since he was about 3. And now he's all grown up and wonderful and doing great writing for us. We're very happy to have him. And then they did it at Sharon Hospital, Lime Rock for two-wheelers. Yeah. And I love that one of their events was teaching kids how to toss newspapers, which is such a lost art. I'm sure those kids had no idea why they were asking them to throw newspapers in a basket.
Okay. And before we get to your story on sugar substitute, congrats to the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. They are upgrading the smaller jump that is going to eventually be, probably by next summer, a year-round jumping facility. So kids in the summer, in the spring, in the fall, in the winter, can practice jumping.
Yeah, and the reason Marshall is talking about this is because Patrick Sullivan did a story about it and went there and took pictures. And it's such a community project, like everything with the Salisbury Winter Sports Association. It's just great.
It's a 20-meter jump, and it's going to really help improve the kids coming out of here that want to go and jump actually in competition.
Well, and also, since this is the sub-theme of the conversation, they're hoping to entice more young people to the program.
And now we can go on to sugar or no sugar.
So I had been doing a story, which is later in the issue, about butternut squash. And I thought, you know, at this time of year, I often use sugar or simple syrup in things. And I thought, well, what about people that can't eat sugar? And some people I know had been eating erythritol. So erythritol seems to be the new magical sugar, but it may actually be the new magical sugar. So that's an explanation in that article about why and how.
All right. We only have 2 minutes left. So let's go very quick get to the opinion page.
Okay. How'd we do that?
I know.
Anyway, we have a theme on the opinion page this week of the environment and climate. So we talk about paying attention to young people on climate change. We have on our viewpoint page and a column by Mac Gordon on the growing human population from John Swan, who writes for us on environmental issues and is so eloquent. And he writes of earth and mountains, sacred and mundane. And we have Tony Peel on stopping the assault on the U.S. environment. And, of course, we have lots of interesting letters, even so many that they are over the two pages.
All right. And before we get to compass very quick, the big three.
Oh, calcium, magnesium, potassium. Read all about it.
All right. Now,
that's right.
Now, you've got a jock. It's too bad we only have about a minute and a half left, but that compass is really full today.
It is full, and part of the reason is that we have the entire Salisbury Fall Festival schedule in there. It's just so much going on over the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Read the schedule. Make your plans now. Rain or shine, it's a lot of fun, and there will be some sun in there. Other parts of Compass, too. We have Susan Rand's new exhibit at the Norfolk Library. She found a new direction by embracing the light. We have two book reviews from Sophia Kaufman on Trick Mirror and The Testament. Really good reviews. Really will make you want to read these books. We have Caitlin Olinger on Kombucha, or however you say it, and it's an interesting and wonderful beverage that she talks about and lets us know if it's really healthy for you. We have Film Columbia celebrating 20 years. We have, that's by Fred Baumgarten, and we have Marzen Epworth on Asian autumnal treats, squash, and yes, tofu. We have a wonderful piece by Stephanie Coven on reaching the highest point in Connecticut by hiking there, too, and lots going on in the calendar.
All right. More. That's just a touch of what you'll find in the Lakeville Journal this week. TriCornerNews.com on Facebook and Instagram. And we'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio.